Last week we began a series of lessons, three parts actually, about the invitation. The fact that we all like to get invitations. We go to the mailbox and get all that junk, and we go through all that junk and throw it away. And if we had a nickel for every piece of junk we'd have, we'd all be wealthy people. But when we get an invitation and it's handwritten and it's from somebody we know and we open it up, it's just kind of a special kind of a invitation that we get. And so we have talked about how that there is an invitation that is given. There's two invitations that are given. One is by the Lord and one is by Satan. One invitation is an unimaginable feast that is beyond comprehension of man to grasp. Just cannot really understand how beautiful heaven is going to be. And yet the other invitation is also unimaginable, but in the most horrific manner, beyond the comprehension of man to grasp. And what is interesting about that is that if we got an invitation to come to something that is just horrendous and terrible and would be detrimental to us and would be doing very bad things to us, we would not go to those kinds of things, unless it's a tumor recital, as we said. But if it was something really, 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 really bad, we wouldn't go. If it was really, 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 really good, we would. And yet the majority of people accept the invitation of Satan, which the end of that invitation is something that is so terribly, terribly bad. And the reason is because Satan makes that invitation look really pretty. Satan makes it look very appealing. And Satan makes us to believe that, well, that is a good thing. We talked about how that first invitation came by God in Genesis 2 and verse 15 and 16 and 17 when God put man in the garden and he put a couple of trees in the garden, the tree of life and the tree of knowledge of good and evil. And he said, the tree of life you can eat all day long. The tree of knowledge of good and evil you shall not eat, because in the day that you eat of it you will die. That's God's invitation. God's invitation was, here's a blessing. If you eat this, it's going to be a great thing. Wonderful thing. Stay in the garden, all the blessings you need, and whatever. Well, Satan comes along in Genesis 3, and he says to Eve, has God indeed said? And she said, well, he told us not to eat that tree. Don't even look at that tree. Don't even touch that tree. And he said, well, come on, it ain't that bad. And so she looked at the tree, saw that it was desirable to make one wise, and she ate of it, and it tasted pretty good for the moment. She gave some to Adam, and then their eyes were opened, and sadly, things really went bad from there. And then we talked about how in Matthew chapter 4, Jesus, when he began his ministry, was approached first by Satan. He had been in the wilderness for 40 days. Satan comes and tempts him in those three occasions. We'll talk about that again in just a moment. And then in 1 John chapter 2 and verse 16, which is really the place that the invitation of Satan is really explained, at least defined, when John tells us that we should not love the world or the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. And here in verse 16, he explains the three parts of the invitation of Satan by saying that all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, that is not of the Father, it's of the world. And the world is passing away, the lust of it, but he who does the will of the Father abides forever. So tonight what we're doing is we're looking at this invitation of Satan, that when he invites us to come to him, he wants us to challenge God's word and say, has God indeed said? The first invitation that he gives us this last week is the lust of the flesh, or the desires of the flesh. The lust is sort of a word that has changed somewhat in its meaning, but it is still the same thing, is that the desires of the flesh is that Satan wants us to live to the fulfillment of our flesh, whether the sexual gratifications or the physical gratifications or whatever it is that fills our appetites, that is what he is going to tempt us with. And we noted that we know his game plan. We know exactly what his game plan is. It's a three-point plan. We know how he's going to do it. We know what he's going to say. We even know what it looks like. I mean, it is so fully identified, it's embarrassing that anybody would fall prey to it, because we know what his game plan is. And so tonight we're going to look at the second one of those that has to do with the desire of the eye, or the lust of the eye, and then what is there. Now, let's go back to Genesis 3 and notice what happens to Eve when she is there in the garden and having this conversation with the serpent. And has God indeed said, you shall not eat of every tree of the garden? And the woman rightfully said. And this shows that she's accountable. This shows that she recognizes what she's supposed to be doing. And she said, well, you know, we can eat of the fruit of the trees of the garden, but of the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, God has said that you shall not eat it, nor shall you touch it, lest you die. And then the serpent said to the woman, you will not surely die, for God knows that in the day that you eat of it, your eyes are going to be open, and you'll be like God, knowing good and evil. Notice verse 6, what happens in the appeal of the eyes. And we would note that when we talk about these attributes that afflict us, they are sort of related to one another, because one builds upon the other and that they're connected. But the thing that she does, not that she didn't know where the tree was, she knew where the tree was. She knew what it looked like. She knew where she could establish those boundaries, but she never had really focused on it. But now, all of a sudden, in verse 6, it says that when the woman saw that the tree was good for food, appetite. You know, there's some food that would just really look delicious to eat. Actually, I'm cleaning out the woods kind of back behind our playhouse, and there's a loquat tree that has not borne any fruit until I cleared it all out. And all of a sudden, the other day, looked back there, and there was loquat all over the place. I'm thinking, where'd that come from? They taste good. They just don't have the appeal. I mean, if you put that next to an apple tree, I'm taking an apple tree any day of the week, even a pear tree, even a grape. I mean, anything. But a loquat, you know, it's just, it doesn't. But she thought, boy, that is good for food. But notice what she does in the second part. It was pleasant to the eyes. That's why we know it wasn't Brussels sprouts. When she looked at the tree, not only did it look like it would taste good, it had a beautiful appeal to it. We don't know what the fruit was. I don't know where the apple thing came from. But anyway, it just was a fruit that just had a very beautiful appearance. Have you ever thought about the nature of God as he put that tree in there? He didn't put an ugly tree. He didn't put a tree that would necessarily be difficult to look at. He gave man the choice and the ability to make those decisions. And when she looked at that tree, not only did she think it would make her wise, but it was something that was pleasant to her eyesight. In other words, it was the desirable thing. And that's what the lust of the eyes is all about. You look at it and think, wow, I'd really like to have some of that. I want to have some of that. And that's what Satan is tempting her with and what she fell prey to. And we go back to our story in Matthew chapter 4. All of these passages are found in your pew Bibles. That's on page 1113 if you can follow along. And see that when Jesus was being tempted by Satan, notice what he did with him and how he tried to appeal to Jesus. And we go down to verse 8. And again, the devil took Jesus onto an exceedingly high mountain, and he showed him all the kingdoms of the world and their glory. And he said to them, all of these I will give you. You can have all of this if you fall down and worship me. What he's doing is he's appealing to the eyes and saying, hey, Jesus, look at this. This is all the glory of the kingdoms. And you don't have to go to the cross. You don't have to go through all this ministry thing. Look, I'll just give it to you right now. We'll take the shortcut. We'll do the drive-through. We'll do something very easy here. So just look at all these things I'm going to give you. And of course, Jesus says to him, away with you, Satan, for it is written that you shall worship the Lord your God, and him only you shall serve. Now, what Jesus is saying is that, okay, I see all that, and it looks great, but I am worshiping God. Because the thing about the lust or the desire of the eyes is it is a problem of focus. It's a problem with where we put our eyes. The problem with Eve was not that she didn't know where the tree was. It was not that she had never seen that tree. It was not that she didn't know what that fruit looked like. What he did to her was he said, I want you to focus on the tree. Not God. Don't look at God. Focus on the tree and think about what joy that's going to bring you. And I want you to look real hard on it, because the more you look at that tree, the less you're going to look at God. And that's what Satan is trying to do to Jesus. Yes, he is tempting Jesus with what his eyes beheld and all the glory. And what that meant is, and the temptation ultimately was that Satan was trying to tempt Jesus with his self-worth and think, yeah, I can have all those kingdoms. boy, they could, I could have them just like that. And it would have been a presumption, of course, on God's, on Jesus' part. I'll get it right in a minute. On Jesus' part to go against the will of the Father, but he knew. And I would suggest that his answer, first of all, was, I know that in Matthew's account, this is the third and final one. Luke changes it, but this last thing, he just says, you know, you just need to get out of here. You need to get out of my sight. I have had it all I want with you. You just get away from here and you go away. And so it was the sin of presumption for Jesus to look with his own eyes and desire all the kingdoms of the world for his own power. And that's what Satan wanted Jesus to do, and Jesus refused to do it. Because he was not going to worship anyone but his Father. I suspect that one of the most difficult sins that you and I deal with is probably this one. There are challenges about the lust of the flesh. We talked a little bit about that last week. Next week, it's the pride of life. But you know, this is the tough one. And this one's tough largely because of where you and I live and because of the world that we live in, the time that we live in. And I think that the desire of the eye is one of the most dangerous sins for Christians because of what it does to the heart. You see, the eyes and the focus of our lives is what determines what's in our heart. We're going to go back to the Old Testament. Deuteronomy chapter 8 and verse 11, page 212. There's a principle that's always been true, but it is something that God warned the children of Israel about that affects this idea of the lust of the eyes and the things that draw people to them. And in Deuteronomy chapter 8, what he is trying to tell them is, I want you to remember me. We're going to go down to verse 11 where he says, beware that you do not forget the Lord your God by not keeping his commandments, his judgments, and his statutes which I command you today. Lest when you have eaten and are full, and have built beautiful houses and dwell in them. And when your herds and your flocks multiply, and your silver and your gold are multiplied, and all that you have is multiplied, when your heart is lifted up, and you forget the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage, who led you through that great and terrible wilderness in which were fiery serpents and scorpions and thirsty land where there was no water, who brought water for you out of the flinty rock, who fed you in the wilderness with manna which your fathers did not know, that he might humble you and that he might test you to do you good in the day, then you say in your heart, my power and the might of my hand have gained me this wealth, and you shall remember the Lord your God, for it is he who gives you your power to get wealth, that he may establish his covenant which he swore to your fathers, as it is to this day. And it shall be, if you by any means forget the Lord your God, and follow other gods, and serve them, and worship them, I testify against you this day that you shall surely perish. And as the nations which the Lord destroys before you, so you should perish because you would not be obedient to the voice of the Lord your God. Now, in this context, what would they be doing that was so bad and so wrong? Were they committing adultery? No. Were they committing murder? No. Were they committing heinous crimes? No. You know what they're doing? Filling themselves with worldliness. Filling themselves with material. And here's what happens with the lust of the eye. And you will notice that when he talks about there in verse 12, what are they doing? Well, they've eaten. Now, they are full. They are living in beautiful houses, and their flocks are multiplying, and their silver and gold are multiplied, and everything you've got is multiplied. You know what materialism does to the heart? It just shrinks it to a prune, just to be nothing. The problem of materialism and the problem with the lust of the eyes is the fact that we're so consumed by our stuff, we don't think about God. And God warns them about this. Because when life becomes all about the me, 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 it's about my, my, and it's about all the things that I want, I'm going to tell you, you haven't got time to think about God. Because the only thing we think about is all of our stuff, and the heart turns away from God. Listen carefully to what I'm going to say, because I'm going to try to say this. I should have put it on this thing here, a projector. Listen to this real carefully. The problem with the desire of the eye is the problem of the desire of the I. Letter I. I want this. I desire this. The desire of the I is that I am living in all of this luxury, and who needs God? Man, I am full and I am happy, and I've done all this by my own hand, by the way. You know, and everything in life is good, and why do I need God? In the New Testament, there's a story that Jesus tells in Luke, the 12th chapter, about a man who was kind of full up of pronouns. He really did think a whole lot about himself. And the story actually begins early. We're going to start at verse 16, because here's the story. The ground of a certain man yielded plentiful. He thought within himself, saying, now listen to all these. I think there's 10. I think I counted that many. What shall I do, since I have no room to store my crops? So he said, I will do this. I will pull down my barns and build greater. There I will store all my crops and my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, you have many good years. A goods laid up for yourselves in many years. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry. And God said to him, fool, this night your soul will be required of you. Then whose will those things be which you have provided? You see, there's the problem. The rich man illustrates the fallacy of the lust of the eyes. Was there anything wrong with building bigger barns? I hope not, because I'd like to build one myself. I'm clearing out a place there in the back. I don't want to build me a barn there, because I'm not building a new one. I haven't got one yet, but one day I'll tear it down and build me another. Nothing wrong with building new barns. Is there anything wrong with having plenty? No. I mean, he was a man who was blessed, yielded plentiful. Is there anything wrong with putting crops in a barn? Not a bit. The problem that he had was, it's the me, me, me. It's all about me, and I'm going to get more, and I'm going to build more barns. I'm going to keep it all myself. And the problem with him is he didn't love his neighbor either to share in those things. But the reality of it was, here was a man who was so filled with himself, he didn't have time with God. And the problem with him was his eyesight. Because the eyesight is explained back in verse 13. You remember Jesus is preaching here. It's kind of an interesting story. He's actually talking about the hypocrisy of the Pharisees. And this guy in the audience, please don't do it. Don't think about it. Don't think about it. This man in the audience just interrupted him. Hey, Lord, could you tell my brother to give me my inheritance? And it's like, where did that come? I'm not even talking about that. What's that all about? I'm not even talking about, you know, this whole thing. But apparently this man just interrupted one of the crowds, said, teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance. And Jesus kind of rebuked him. But notice what he says in verse 15. Take heed and beware of covetousness. Take heed and beware of covetousness, or all covetousness. For one's life does not consist in the abundance of things he possesses. You know why? Because that's the desire of the eyes. Is this getting kind of close to home to all of us? All the stuff we've got. Life is not about the abundance that we've got. Besides, you got to get insurance for every bit of it. And you know how we think about insurance people. You know, I mean, take an insurance agent and a lawyer, put them on the same pew. What do? You know, but the problem with the rich fool was that he thought, hey, my life is about my stuff. And the consequence was the fact that his stuff didn't go with him when he died. God said, you're a fool. Because when you die, who's that going to be? You're not taking it with you. It's not going to be something that's going to be carted up into heaven with you, because the consequence of your lust of the eyes is the fact that you're going to lose your soul. And I tell you, there's a lot of reasons that people are going to regret standing before God with their souls condemned by the divine. And one of the greatest tragedies is that they're going to be standing there thinking, I lost my soul over that? I gave up my soul because of money? Because of possessions, because of houses, because of clothes, because of all of that stuff. I am losing my soul because of that. I mean, how sad is that? And that's what the lust of the eyes, or the desire of the eyes, is all about. Because materialism is the greatest cause of lost souls in the church. Now notice again, in Deuteronomy 8, God didn't accuse them in this text of committing adultery and murder and fornication and none of those other things like that. No. He was saying that you're going to forget me because of all the good stuff that you've got. Now he was going to bless them with that because the deal was, if you obey me, I'm going to bless you so much you're not even going to believe it. But that came from God. And what he reminded them of in Deuteronomy 8 is that I'm the one that gave you this. If we have possessions, we need to say, thank you, God. If you have a roof over your head, thank God. If you've got clothes on your back, thank God. If you've got food, thank God. Everything we've got needs to be given to the glory of God. But you see, the materialism and the lust of the eyes, that doesn't come from God. It's all about me. In the parable of the sower, in Luke, the 8th chapter, did you notice that when he was explaining the third soil, remember you got the one that goes on the rocky soil, then you got the one that's in the wayside, then you got the one that's in the rocky soil, and then of course we got the good one, number four. But number three, the third soil, that's us. That's our problem. That's where we really have a problem, because third seed that fell among the thorns, what happened to them? Luke 8, verse 14, page 1191, it says, now the ones that fell among the thorns are those who, when they have heard, they go out and are choked with the cares, the riches, and the pleasures of life, and they bring no fruit to maturity. There's nothing wrong with the cares of life in itself. There's nothing wrong with the riches of life, and there's nothing wrong with the pleasures of life. The problem is they lost focus. That is all they could think about. It is called covetousness. I know that's a word we don't use in our vernacular. I don't know if people would even know what you were talking about. It is avarice. I love this word. You're going to love this one. Cupidity. That's a D. Bowman word. It just means simply we're greedy. Oh, now we may not give that sense, but the idea is that we're more worried about, we love our stuff. Oh, yeah. Man, we'll sit and we'll look at it and we'll feel good about it and all the things. We just love our stuff. And that is the lust of the eyes. And it's insidious. And how it can invade our lives in so many ways. And what God is trying to tell us as people of God, that should not be the case. In Ephesians chapter 5, and again, you know, the language is there, the word is something we don't use, but you know, he says this, we don't need to have fornication in our lives. I got that. All uncleanness. Yes, I understand that. But he also says, we should not be covetous people. Let it not even be named among you as fitting for saints. We should not be people that worship the almighty dollar. To think that our prestige and our honor and our identity comes from what we drive, where we live, what address we've got, who we know, and those kind of things that are external of the eyes is because that is something that will damn a soul just as easy as anything else that's going to come along down the road. In Colossians chapter 3 and verse 5, he says that therefore we are to put to death your members which are on the earth, fornication and uncleanness, passion and evil desire. There's that word again. But he explains it. Now, what's interesting is that if I ask most people, do you know anybody that commits idolatry? No. I do. There's a lot of people that commit that are engaged in idolatry. Well, what do you mean? The idol is not just this little funny-looking Buddha guy that's, you know, idolatry is I'm worshiping the things that I've got. An idol is something that we have trust in. An idol is something we give worth to. And the problem with the lust of the eyes is the fact that we have such confidence and hope in this stuff thing that we've got, that becomes idolatry. And that's what Paul says, is that covetousness should not be a name among us, because covetousness is idolatry. And the reason that it is idolatry, and when we talk about idolatry, what does that mean? We worship. And as Isaiah would describe in chapter 40, the silly thing about idolatry is we take a tree, we cut it down. I know about that. I could make it normal. We could cut a tree down and we use part of it to build the fire to cook our food. And then the other part of it, we get over here and we carve it into an idol. We fall down and say, oh, deliver me, idol. You're my deliverer. That makes no sense, right? In other words, I don't trust in God. I trust this piece of wood to deliver me. And that's why covetousness is idolatry, because notice what the Hebrew writer says in Hebrews 13 And in verse 5, let our conduct be without covetousness. Be content with such things as you have, for he himself has said, I will never leave you nor forsake you. I brought this up before, and you've heard it. It's one of my favorite quotes. It's from the movie Shenandoah. Remember Jimmy Stewart at the beginning of the movie is sitting there with all of his children, and he's getting ready to say grace. And it starts out okay, and then he kind of sidetracks, and you know, he says, you know, he's got his bounty all over the table, and so he's thanking the Lord for everything. I've got to write that down one day. I don't know. I keep quoting it, but I'll probably massacre it. But anyway, he's saying this prayer, and you know, thank you, God, for all this food, although I'm the one that planted it, and I'm the one that watered it, and I'm the one that did everything. Not very sincere prayer. But you see, the thing about covetousness and the reason that it is idolatry is because we don't think God's going to take care of me. If I'm going to take care of anybody, it's me. I don't think that God is going to take care of me like I think I need to be taken care of. I'm high maintenance, and so I don't trust in God. What the Hebrew writer is saying here is that our lives need to be without this covetous spirit because he said, I will never leave you and I will not forsake you, so that we may boldly say, the Lord is my helper. The Lord is my helper. I will not fear. What can man do to me? Because I'm not trusting in my life in this stuff. I trust in the Lord to take care of me. And see, what the devil wants to do is he wants us to think differently. And the problem with materialism, and the problem with covetousness, if you haven't figured this out yet, there are two things that are basically wrong with it. Somebody asked to define the word enough. How would you define the word enough? The best definition that I have heard about the word enough says that enough is always a little bit more than I've got. Isn't that right? I mean, isn't that the way we think about enough? You know, when I get enough, you never get enough. And that's what the wise men said in Ecclesiastes chapter 4. And the problem is that it never is quite enough. He says that I returned and I saw vanity under the sun. There is one alone without companion. He has neither son nor brother. Yet there is no end to all his labors. Notice, yet there is no end to all his labors, nor is his eye satisfied with riches. But he never asked, for whom do I toil and deprive myself of good? This is also vanity and grave misfortune. His eye is never satisfied. Did you know? Probably you do. And the only reason I know is because I got to go by the billboard. Did you know the Powerball's up to $750 million? Do you know that's about $250 million away from a billion? And people think that they're going to go win that thing and it's going to make them happy. That's the lot. That is the, you know, if you want to know what the lust of the eye is, it's the billboard to show the lottery. You look at it and think, what I could do with $750 million of. How much, Barbara? A third, fourth, fifth, 90% of it to the government? I don't know, but anyway. That's the lust of the eye. And it's not going to be worth any of that. And the problem is, it's not going to be enough. It never is enough. Ecclesiastes chapter 5 and verse 10. He who loves silver will not be satisfied with silver, nor he who loves abundance will it with increase. This is also vanity. When goods increase, they increase who eat them. So what profit have the owners except to see them with their eyes? The sleep of a laboring man is sweet, whether he eats little or much. But the abundance of the rich will not permit him to sleep. I remember, as I recall, that when the first lottery winner in Florida was announced, they couldn't find him for a couple of weeks. You know why? He was too busy installing ADT, landmines, dogs, you know, searchlights and everything around his house. Because now all of a sudden he was a multimillionaire and he was scared to death. I'm going to tell you, the week before he won that lottery, I doubt seriously he was that scared for his life. But now he was. And that's what the wise man is saying. What? Are we nuts or something? I mean, we think that money's going to bring all that happiness. We got the desires of the eye going. And what he says is, you're never going to have enough. And when you have it, you're going to be so scared. The sleep of a laboring man is sweet, whether he eats little or not. He doesn't have those worries. because they're not consumed. The lust of the eyes is we're just consumed. I've got to have this. I've got to have this. And it's just like that new bicycle. Do you know what a new bicycle becomes? An old bicycle. Because when we first ride it, we bring it home, we'll park it over there, and we'll rub it down. Give it a couple of weeks, and we throw it down. Okay, I don't care. It's in the grass. You know. You do that with our lawnmowers. You do that with our cars. That's what I love about my truck. I'm never buying a new truck. Man, I can park that thing anywhere. Anybody can hit it, you know. You know what I'm saying. And then, sadly, we don't get the fact that Proverbs 23, isn't it interesting how God knows about all these things and tells us, reminds us? Proverbs 23 and verse 4, do not overwork to be rich. Because of your own understanding, cease. Will you set your eyes on that which is not? For riches certainly make themselves wings. They fly away like an eagle toward heaven. I can't remember the last time I had $20 in my pocket. But it was a bird because it was gone like that. You know, that's the way money goes. I don't know who the Joneses are. But I wish they didn't live next door. Because we try to keep up with them. What is the answer to the lust of the eyes? What is the answer to materialism? Well, God tells us. And again, we realize that in and of itself, there's nothing wrong with wealth and the possessions of this world and those kinds of things. Some of the great heroes of the Bible were very wealthy, very people. But here is the advice that God gives us in 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verse 6. Godliness with contentment is great gain. We could talk about that for a while. If you want to be happy, seek godliness. If you want to be miserable, seek worldly gain. But godliness with contentment is great gain. Folks, we didn't bring anything into this world, and it is certain we are carrying nothing out. If we have food and clothing, we should be content. The problem in verse 9 is that this is the lust of the eyes. Those who desire to be rich, they will fall into all manners of temptation and snares and into many foolish and harmful lusts, and they will drown men in destruction and perdition. Because the love of money and the pursuit of riches and those things of the lust of the eyes will bring you so much misery, you will not believe how unhappy you will be. You will be happy, 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 and be miserable. I've had people sit before me and say, we have everything in the world that anybody could imagine. We have all the blessings of this world, and we are absolutely miserable. Their marriages are on the rocks. Their love for one another is gone, and they have things beyond possessions, and they're not happy. You know why? Because their focus is not where it should be. For such have strayed. And this is the danger in verse 10 about what this sin will do, is that it will cause people to lose their faith, because they will stray from their faith in their greediness, and they will pierce themselves through with many sorrows. And when you watch that happen, it's a sad thing to happen. He goes on to say in verse 17, command those who are rich in this present age not to be haughty, not to trust in uncertain riches, but in the living God who gives us richly all things to enjoy. Here